Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill. The role of Wendy will not be played by Wendy today, but Dane Neal will be filling in for Wendy. Hi, Dane.
Hello.
How are, no, you don't have to do Wendy's voice. Because
like
if you were,
Doubtfire.
You want to go deeper.
Ah, yes.
Much deeper.
Hi there.
That's better.
Wendy here.
That's much better. Now it seems more convincing. Wendy is taking a few days off because she has a new dog. I'm almost positive she'll talk about it when she comes back.
Maybe, well, you never know. Maybe not.
Right,
she's been a little cloak and dagger because she didn't want to jinx it. But now, of course, what's the name? Is it Kona?
I think so.
So one of those. Maybe she picked up an extra one, too.
Yep.
But, you know, that important initial bonding time with you and a pet or a child or whatever it is,
right.
You know, is so important, and she's making use of it. It's a very cute dog.
It's a C-section, right? I mean,
it was a C-section, and she did, this qualifies under maternity leave, Steve, which I'm not positive how. I don't see how that's possible, but
she'll figure out a way to make it work.
Right, absolutely.
How about Coca-Cola?
Coca-Cola is a good name for a
like
dog.
That, yeah.
Bubbly name.
I see a sponsor opportunity.
Maybe, possibly.
I don't think so.
So she'll be back not tomorrow, not Friday, but Monday, because that's maternity leave on dogs is 5 days traditionally. So she'll be out for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah. Even with a C-section, it's usually like 3-4 days. Boom, you're out.
Yep. That's how they work that. I have to ask you, we were just talking during the crosstalk with Steve and Dave and Andrea about all the new foods that were rolled out at White Sox Park yesterday. You were not at this event, right?
I did not, but yeah, I know Kevin very well. Obviously, I saw some of the things he posted. I read some of the stories about it. And we know, you know, the action on the field can take, it's win or lose, right? You never can guarantee that. But one thing that the White Sox typically guarantee is that they have some of the best food in all of sports. I think even the Cubs would concede that they have the best food in sports in Chicago. You know?
It's so funny to me that that's become a large element of the experience right? of attending a baseball game, because for years and years and years, you kind of got a hot dog, and that was kind of it. I mean, there were some options beyond the hot dog, but not a whole lot. But now, well, it's like going to a four-star restaurant.
Peanuts, Cracker Jack, you know, the traditional old-time grainy black and white team photo of food that you'd have there. But yeah, right, that's bragging rights. You know, it'd be like Steely Dan. It's like, they played terrible live, but their concessions, they're so good.
So good, yeah. Right. Yeah. I don't understand how that became a major component of the experience of attending a baseball game, but good. If that brings people in, then good.
Well, the food thing has been elevated in a bunch of different places, whether it's Lollapalooza or concerts or the United Center. I mean, it's in the thought process. Before, it used to be, hey, give them have beer for sure, right?
Yeah,
they
right.
need that. And then have something for people to eat so they don't just get hungry and leave, right?
Right.
So you have to have something. But now, you know, Chicago is a great food town. We love our food and we appreciate it. And so now they're finding out that people, like, if that is kind of your bragging rights, that people will attend, they will overpay, they will brag about the food, they really appreciate it.
Sure,
you know,
of course.
People, it's not like they're just trying to say, like, hey, you know, we've got these are good, it costs a little bit more, but it's wonderful. People are calling for this.
A couple of years ago, I broadcast from Cubs opening day, and they brought me some of the new foods they were bringing to Wrigley Field that season. And one of them was a lobster roll, a very good lobster roll. And I just thought,
is there such a thing as a bad one?
I've had a couple that are a little substandard.
Okay, gotcha.
Normally, if they go through the trouble of putting lobster in a lobster roll, I mean, I'm going to enjoy it. Right. But I just, it was amazing to me that you could go to a baseball game and have lobster while watching a baseball game. That's just great.
Well, you saw, and you may see a little bit of that happening with the White Sox, especially as the team improves and, you know, all the kind of things that go along with that, is that you looked at what, and we had some of the people in, so what the Cubs did with that kind of chef series, right? Where you integrated some of Chicago's most noteworthy chefs in their restaurants, had them come in and do sort of pop-up residencies.
Yeah, right, right.
You know, and serve elevated food. You know, Rick Bayless was having like special, you know, tacos and street food, and Stephanie Izard, you know, with the girl and the goat. You had, it's the kind of thing that, right, the Bill and Dane of like 10, 15 years ago, it just would have blown our minds that they were even bothering to do this. The chefs are just excited about it as the teams.
I can imagine. I can't have a hot dog. Every once in a while, I'll be somewhere where hot dogs are served, and unless there is a baseball game being played in front of me, the hot dog just doesn't taste right. If there's a baseball game going on, I could eat them all day. I'm fine with them.
That is the strangest, actually true phenomenon.
Crazy?
Because my kids, and of course you would get along with them in a bunch of different ways, you know, on the toy side and the movie side and the knowledge of cartoon characters, is Like, you could not get them to eat a hot dog off the grill, even at home. Even if you boil them, like, or whatever kind of ways, like, I ate hot dogs over the years. You could, they would, so, but they'll have them at the park all day long. I don't know if it's because they're steamed. You could even get the same exact, you know, it's a Vienna beef dog. You could get the same exact everything.
It just feels right when you're in a baseball park or stadium to be eating a hot dog. We, as a kid, my mom would make them in the summer, especially once or twice a week. And it, that's for lunch. We're having hot dogs. This is perfect. But as an adult, it would never occur to me to have it as part of a meal unless, like I said, if there's a baseball game being played, I want one. I need one.
It is the perfect environment for consumption of that. And the hot dog people seem to, but a lot of other people like hot dogs in other scenarios. But when you look at like the old style folks, you know, they're trying to recreate that scenario. A stadium in everyone's living room. Otherwise, you know, people don't enjoy it.
Dane, maybe you can answer this. This is a text and I don't know the answer to it. Do they still sell Oscar Mayer smoky links at the ballpark? They did it one time. I don't know if that's one of the official hot dog brands. They all the hot dog companies jockey for that, because, you know, if you've got the hot dog rights to a major ballpark, you're going to sell a ton of them in a summer.
You know, it takes a village, Bill. And there's a conference room somewhere where, like, the folks from Johnsonville are saying, like, it's like, we got to get these. This is big. You know, if we're going to be the darlings of Sausage Fest 2018, we need to secure these rights.
Yeah.
And, it's a big deal, right? The logos and all that kind of stuff. Smokey Links and Oscar Mayer, it seems like a big brand. I think if they wanted to do it, they could.
Yeah.
They may figure that they have, you know, they have enough market share in the Smokey Link world. I'm not sure.
Who was the hot dog company who years ago figured out you can put cheese right in the hot dog? Like, you'd have a hot dog and there'd be layers of cheese interspersed with, you know, your grade A hot dog meat, because they use nothing but the best in hot dogs. You know,
sure,
that.
Sure, of course.
But the cheese was just layered right in. And that was like, that was miraculous.
Well, it was Oscar Mayer. You know, in Oscar Mayer, we'll all know, of course, historians will know, right along the lines of Thomas Edison and Jonas Salk and other great inventors.
Yes, one of the best.
You know, came in there and you think to yourself, it's not broke, don't fix it. And they thought, like, well, hey, let's try to innovate this hot dog thing. Let's try to, you know, branch out, be more things to more people. They put cheese in it. You know, I was hooked. As soon as I had that, you just throw that baby in the microwave as a kid, you know, and then.
But now admit this part. Brats are, on the whole, a brat is going to be better than a hot dog, isn't it? If everything is equal, you want to go the brat, don't you?
In my book, I think it's really what you're in the mood for. You know, there are times, you know, when, you know, you can have the, you know, fine dining and elevated cuisine and all that kind of stuff. There's times when I'll enjoy like a regular, you know, like a, you know, just a regular pizza that you throw, like a Red Baron, right? You can doctor it up a little bit. I think there's something to be said for everything. I think the whole brat situation or the Polish sausage, there's always good. There's really awesome stuff. But you just kind of have to be in the mood for it. Sometimes you're just in the mood for a hot dog.
Absolutely. Well said, Dane. Very American of you.
Yeah.
So American. Dane Neal is filling in for Wendy. We'll come back. We have a lot to discuss with you. Did you see the new Roseanne, the new revamped Roseanne? It was on last night. They showed two episodes. What did you think of that? We'll talk about that next. Stick around. It's Bill Leff and Dane Neal in for Wendy on WGN. All right. It's me, Bill, and it's him, Dane. Not Wendy, but Dane. Wendy's off today, tomorrow, and Friday. She'll be back on Monday, because she got a dog, and I'm going to try to convince her to talk about it when she comes back.
Oh, maybe she might bring the dog into studio.
Wouldn't that be magical?
I think based on the fact that people can sort of see WGNRadio.com.
That'd be fun. Yep. All right. Roseanne was on last night. No, this isn't a rerun radio show from years and years and years ago. Roseanne Barr, remember her? She was on last night. They showed two episodes. It hadn't been on, the Roseanne show, and I didn't realize this, Dane. It hadn't been on in 21 years.
Whoa.
Did you think in your head, if somebody said, when was the last time Roseanne was on, you go, oh, it must be 8 or 10 years ago.
I wouldn't have thought it was that long.
It's a long time ago.
But it's the kind of thing, you know, these shows that become these kind of touchstones in your life kind of thing, you know, it's appointment television. And back when there was only so many channels, you had the opportunity to do that. I don't know that if you could have a show that's quite like that nowadays. I mean, exactly like that. But then again, they never go away because of all the channels. When a show goes off the air, you don't miss it. You could probably, you know, watch Roseanne right now.
Sure.
You know,
the old episodes.
Some decent cable.
Yeah.
So it is hard to believe that it's been that long since they were making new shows.
I was trying to figure out last night as I was watching it, and we'll talk about whether or not it was good. And if you want to weigh in, please do it. 312-981-7200. I was trying to think why all of a sudden in the last couple of years there have been so many incidents of shows from the past, like Will and Grace, or The X-Files, or The Gilmore Girls, or Arrested Development, where years pass and they say, it's time to bring it back? Like, is that us saying we're more comfortable with something we're already familiar with? We want to see something that we already kind of know the boundaries. Or have they run out of ideas in Hollywood? Which is the answer to you think?
I think, and I'd love to get your thoughts on it and the listeners too. I think it's a combination of a lot of those things. I think number one, it's, you guys remember George Clooney, they had asked him to come back and reprise his role, mm-hmm. and he said he had other things to do. Mm-hmm. So you have, on one case, they don't have anything else going on or anything better to do, number one. I think two, it's safe. You look at all these movies and we wonder why there's so many sequels. Baywatch, right? Really?
Yeah.
You see them kind of going back to these safe places. You know, it's expensive to put movies together. There's so much competition out there for entertainment. And so if you can find something that already has a long-standing and kind of loving fan base built in, why not? You know,
but makes sense. Always,
don't you think, because I'm sorry, cause no, some on, of Mary. The networks are struggling too?
I can't figure it out.
And this brings back their main, you know, ABC is bringing back Roseanne. I mean, it's just,
I guess,
kind of
so.
A big thing. I mean, some of them are so, you know, they're struggling. And some of the sitcoms today are awful.
Yeah.
And they come and go so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, except the Big Bang Theory and Modern Family. Those are about the only two that really.
So you think if you're a network executive and you have to gamble, do you say, let's find something, start from scratch, whole new idea, and see if that plays, or let's go back to something we know works, plus we know it a built-in audience?
It's cheaper. They have the set.
Well, couch. They didn't leave it up. I'm pretty sure they stored it away somewhere. I'm almost positive. And there's a bunch more. They're talking about, Helen Hunt was talking about this yesterday. It looks like they're going to do Mad About You is coming back with her and Paul Reiser.
Wow.
The cast of Mad About You. They have hinted that maybe Friends will come back at some point.
What?
Some of them want to do it. Some of them don't. Even Jerry Seinfeld, who said never, ever, ever would we come back and reprise our roles, he even said recently, yeah, it's possible.
Well, people will definitely come back to check it out. It is newsworthy, right? Because these were beloved shows. When it comes to the point when the final show of whatever series you're on is, you know, the top 10 of the most watched things ever, you know, with all of those series, people were like, oh, we've got to watch the final one. You know,
right.
You got to say goodbye.
Right.
The thing is you want to make sure that they can come back and still do it, you know, that the writing is still good, because a lot of times these shows sort of peter out for the fact of, you know, people still like to continue and make money. Maybe they have other projects, but sometimes
they run out of ideas.
Yeah, they run out of ideas.
Yeah, we've had these characters do everything they can possibly do. Let's pull the plug.
You look at Big Bang Theory, and they have kind of extended beyond what is the normal shelf life. Like, hey, what else are we doing? Let's do this for $1 million an episode or whatever it is that they're making. I think you go with like the Blackhawks, you know, sports dynasty retooling model, right? Where you take and you have these, you know, beloved characters that go in, and then, you know, over time, maybe you swap out, you know, Dan from Roseanne, and you bring in somebody new. You're just a piece here and there. You've got the core.
Right.
Right. And then over.
Well, that's kind of what they did yesterday, because all of a sudden now the Connors have grandchildren. So we didn't know any of them when the show ended years and years ago. But now we're meeting them, and that creates new storylines, new character base. So,
yeah.
You know,
or you look at like Kevin James, who just comes back and does the same show and just calls it something different.
Right. There's that. All right. Let's get your thoughts. We're at 312-981-7200. We'll start out with Dave. Dave, how are you? You saw Roseanne last night?
Yeah, I was up for about 5 minutes and then they lost me.
How come? Why did they lose you?
You know, I get enough of the other politics with Spanky and his gang and the news and everything else. I don't need to see it in a rerun comedy.
For people who didn't see the episodes last night, one of the major storylines is that Roseanne and her sister do not see eye to eye politically. Roseanne is a fan of Donald Trump. Her sister Jackie, not a fan of Donald Trump. So that became a major component to the show. You thought that was unnecessary, kind of gratuitous?
Yeah, I mean, my partner watched the whole thing, and, you know, I just don't need to be rehashing every day's news and et cetera.
Sure. Understood. Well, thanks, Dave.
I mean, I know they got other storylines going on with grandkids and wives being off serving the country and all that, but I needed something funny, not to just keep beating the same news to death.
Yeah. All right. So you will not be tuning in again. That's it for you.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is I think I pretty much lost anything to deal with Roseanne when she was talking to Kimmel the other day, and then, you know, her hand gesture and whatever she had to say.
She can be a little crude sometimes. Well, thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
All right.
Take care. I have to say, I thought that, now, if you listen to the show with any regularity, you know I'm not Donald Trump's biggest fan.
Right.
But I liked the fact, I thought it was a very brave move of them to have her and her husband on the show be Trump supporters. I thought that that's an interesting move, and I liked the way it played out. I liked that there was some back and forth politically. I thought that played really nicely because, honestly, that's what a lot of people are talking about with and without families right now. Within your family structure, you're talking about, I voted for him, you voted for her. That seemed very real to me.
I think over the years, that's one of the things that really resonated with viewers for Roseanne, is that they took either problems or situations that you might find yourself
sure.
in or news out there, and then you kind of bounce it off. What is this kind of blue-collar family scenario?
Do you remember there was a time where both Roseanne and her husband Dan were out of work, and they were trying to figure out, what do we do now? And I thought to myself, boy, I don't remember a sitcom ever being that real and saying, hey, there's times where no one in the family is working. You got to find something to survive. I thought that was brilliant back then. So the political stuff didn't bother me at all. I thought that was very honest.
I think that's what they're going to do. And because the stories are new, although they're all over the place and people may feel like they get enough of it from the news, they're going to try to take some of that in and give these characters that you know and love, like, what's their thoughts?
Right. Sure. Absolutely. All right. We must take a break. News is next. And then there's a whole lot more after that. Dane Neal sitting in for Wendy. This is WGN. Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill F. It's Dane Neal. Dane is sitting in for Wendy. Wendy will return on Monday. Steve, I know we don't have any exact numbers yet, but you were telling me off air that the ratings came in for Roseanne's show last night, and they were really good, weren't they?
Well, you know what? I haven't seen it officially, but there's a friend of mine who's a TV anchor in Cleveland, and he tweeted out that 18 million people watched last
night. Pretty good.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. Nearly every text we got was saying essentially what I was thinking last night, which is, 21 years passed since the last Roseanne episode, and several people commented by way of text saying it seems like they were a little rusty, like they didn't know each other's moves quite yet, but they expect that to improve, and I do too. The show itself, the Roseanne show last night, was a little contrived in a sitcom-y way in that there were a lot of problems that were presented. You know how, like, in real life, things kind of happen over a period of time, whereas on a sitcom, somebody has to come in and they present the problem, and then the rest of the show is them trying to solve the problem.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that yesterday, but you look the other way sometimes.
Well, these aren't roles that they were necessarily playing. For Roseanne, this is her, right?
Right.
You know, and John Goodman has been such a great actor in so many different ways, and so he is so identified with this role. They'll get more comfortable at it, because it really is. I think they would be the first to be. It's a really big part of them.
Yeah.
Like their own kind of personalities definitely came through. So I think they'll get there. You wonder if, I think a lot of people are going to watch it just to see it, because
there's a curiosity factor.
And then how many people stick over weeks? They're
going
to have to make sure they've got some compelling content.
Well, they always say anytime there's a huge premiere like yesterday, the numbers were really good for this, that the telltale sign is week two and week three. There more than likely will be some drop off because people just want to see, is it what I remember? Is it different from what I remember? So the true tale is told in weeks two and three and four. We'll see what happens down the line. But, I'll tune in again. I thought it was really good. It was good to see everybody back again. There's still a couple of characters that they've not shown that'll more than likely be back in the next few weeks. Johnny Galecki is an interesting one because he was such a, not a minor player on the original Roseanne, but, one of the cast.
He's a peripheral guy.
Yeah, but now that he's done so well, it's interesting that he'll be coming back and reprising his role.
He's definitely bringing a little bit of star power back into it. And you mentioned Cleveland. Steve said he got the word in from Cleveland. I guess that's the oracle. Is like Drew Carey show. That would be a neat one to bring back.
There's so many.
And you wonder if they would even, if some of these shows, like the people would get together to do, not a full-blown thing, but maybe do one of these like six-episode kind of things like you'll see on, Netflix or cable.
Yeah, no question. All right. Saturday, as you know, was a very, very big day. There were demonstrations all across the country in terms of controlling our guns, getting better gun laws out there. Well, it doesn't end on Saturday. The 50 Miles More movement is going on today. On the phone with us right now is Alamitu Kaldart, who is one of the organizers of that event. Can you hear me, Alamitu? How are you?
Hi, how are you? I'm good.
First of all, explain what this movement is, because I've heard a little bit about it, but I don't know all the details. What exactly is the 50 Miles More movement?
So kids from around Wisconsin came together to you know, embark on a 50-mile march from Madison to Gainesville, Wisconsin. That is the hometown of Speaker of the House Paul Ryan. This march is towards Paul Ryan because, as the Speaker of the House, he has a big power of making and changing the laws.
Now, will you, because there were some rumors that you're going exactly to his house, and then other people said not to his house, just to the town, where exactly will you be ending up?
No, we'll be ending up in Traxburg Park, Wisconsin. That's in Janesville. We can't go directly to his house. That's not happening.
That would be wrong. All right, good.
Yeah.
Very, very good. And allow me to explain your reason. If it boiled down to one specific reason or a couple of reasons why you're so interested in this, what would they be?
I'm marching because, you know, I want this, and we need this to be the last generation that ever has to go through another mass shooting again. I'm tired of seeing all these lives being taken every single day due to the inactions of our elected officials, and I'm marching for everyone that can't march and for those families who've dealt with the grief of losing a family member.
You're pretty young, right? Are you 15 years old?
I am, yes.
All right, so I'm sure you've been told this by people who are a little bit older than you, but I just want to reiterate it. When I went to school, there was absolutely 0% fear that I would be killed in my school. I never once walked to school thinking, this could be my last day on Earth. But I imagine somebody your age, you probably think about that constantly, don't you?
Right. Yeah, everyone thinks that, no, this is not going to happen to us. There's a million schools, you know. But we have that fear now. We have it happens to the most unexpected times. And to have that fear and to walk around in school wondering if we are the next school, that's completely unacceptable.
You see the demonstrations, you know, and kind of these and marches and everything happening all around the country. I don't think there's any state that didn't have some way to participate. But you look at a state like Wisconsin, a state like Wisconsin is as identified with guns as almost any other. It's a big hunting state. You know, I know I spent lots and lots of time there. Was there any trouble kind of organizing or getting people involved? Because maybe the parents are into hunting. Or do you see that there's really a distinction? People there understand that this is not what we're talking about. It's the assault rifles and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. We have one of the organizers of the march actually, you know, is a hunter, and we have a distinction between hunting and military style weapons. There's a big difference, and we make sure to establish that when we talk about what we want in gun reform. And we've gotten a lot of support from the parents. You know, the people in the marchers come from all different parties. You know, it's not just Republicans and Democrats. It's everybody, and we all have differentiating views, but we all have the common goal of gun reform.
We're talking with Elamitu Keldart. She is one of the organizers for the 50 Miles More movement. There's a big march today in Wisconsin. What do you think, and I'm sure you've been asked this question before, but I still don't know the answer to it. What was different this time? What happened in Florida that all of a sudden, because there had been so many other shootings, Elamitu, and everybody always said, oh, I wish there was something we could do, but unfortunately there isn't. What was different this time that made kids all over the country stand up and just go, we need to be heard all of a sudden?
Mm-hmm. I do think, though, I want to quickly add that Black youth have been talking about, you know, gun violence for a long time in their neighborhoods, and now I believe that, you know, with the Parkland shooting, all their voices have been amplified, and now with the spread of the issue going around the country and the movement, we're all coming together to better every single community, not just one particular community, and to include the gun violence in urban cities that they face gun violence on a daily basis. You know, coming from a predominantly white area, I don't have the same fear as someone, you know, that from my, you know, I live in Milwaukee. For someone in Milwaukee who sees gun violence in their front yards, in their neighborhoods, in their community. So I think this time it's just that the youth have stood up. We realize that this is such a big issue that's affecting every single one of us, and that something needs to be changed if we need to start, that something needs to change if we want to start saving lives.
On the political side, you've heard, you know, politicians, some have come out totally in support of this and a lot of things that you're pushing for. Some have come out completely against it. Speaker Ryan has been really noticeably silent, you know, on all of this, and seeing as how not only are you doing stuff in his hometown, but, you know, this is kind of with him as a focus, not directly in his front yard or anything like that. Do you expect him to come out? What do you expect him to say about this? This is obviously you guys calling out for his support, you know, specifically.
Right. So we would really love if Paul Ryan did show up at the rally that we were holding on Wednesday. But all we really want is to start a conversation with him. We want to have a sit down and, you know, a debate. Like, why? What is it that you don't see that we are seeing? And we have like 3 asks for him. Like, if we ever do ever talk to him, we want to, you know, ban the military style weapons of personal possession of civilians, because those are completely unnecessary to have. We want to ban bump stocks, that, you know, that turn semiautomatic weapons into automatic weapons. We want increased regulation, you know, a higher purchasing age. So we have all these asks for him, and we just want to sit down with him and talk about this stuff. We heard from one of his spokesperson that they had said Paul Ryan appreciates all the youth speaking up, so... he knows we're coming. I know he does.
Do you look at that as progress, Alameda, or is that just something that's kind of a stock answer from a politician when they say something like, yeah, we appreciate it that you're showing interest? How do you view that when you're told that?
I guess for me, like, me personally, it's he understands that we're here. He understands that we are, you know, coming forward with what we want. However, I feel like it's just like in a lazy excuse to say, you know, I don't want to talk about this with you. And he's going, I don't know, I think he's going the right direction by commenting that we're here, but I want him to go all the way to actually physically talk with us.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. What do you make of a comment Rick Santorum said the other day that teenagers shouldn't be organizing rallies, they should be learning CPR? How do you respond to something like that?
Oh my gosh. That's, We are organizing this because we care so deeply about it. I'm seeing people, you know, we see people we care and we love, you know, die, and it's because of a law that's not being changed. And I don't know why that's so hard for people to understand. Like, this is our lives being affected, and I'm so sick and tired of not being heard and people silencing us because we're too young. We paved the way for the generation behind us. For the next generation, and we pave the way for our future. We can't continue this for other people to have to deal with. We need to end this right now.
Ultimately, the goal that you have is really, really clear, and I know that there's a lot of give and take at the federal level, and there's a lot of things they can't do, and you've got the NRA, and you've got all this kind of stuff. If, regardless of how successful you are with Paul Ryan, there's a lot that can be done at the state and local level. Do you see yourself kind of picking up kind of the slack in those areas and kind of getting involved locally and with the state government as well to kind of get that change done, at least in Wisconsin?
Yes, definitely. So the leader of our march, she talked about wanting to start a hashtag 50 more and hashtag 50 states. So we have want to start this goal where each state, you know, all of the other 49 states, to start their own 50-mile march to their capital of the state. We would like everyone to be involved in it and to grow this movement, because we can't just stop right now.
Yeah.
We have to finish and continue this through every single state.
Alameda, I'm sure you've heard this from family and friends, but I'm proud of you. This is quite an undertaking. What do you want to do when you're working, when you're done with school? What is your hope career-wise? You got a couple of minutes to think about it. Sure. Sure.
Pressure, Bill.
But you're 15 and you've already done more politically than I've done, and I'm quite a bit older than 15. So that I'm so happy for you. I really am.
Thank you.
Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Alameda Keldart, one of the organizers of the 50 Miles More March. If they want to know more, is there a website that they can visit?
Yeah, it's called 50milesmore.org. And we have every information that you need on that website.
Excellent. Keep fighting the fight. You're doing great.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. All right, let's do this. Right. We'll take a quick break and then more show. Stick around. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. Bill F. It's Dane Neal. It's WGN. I'm sure you noticed this, too, if you watched any of the footage from any of the demonstrations that took place on Saturday. There was a huge presence for voter registration, and I think, ultimately, that's the best weapon, is that all these kids who want their voices heard, some of them not even of voting age yet, are about to be of voting age, and if they're that fed up, that's where you'll see the change. That's where there's almost an inevitable change.
It's got to be kind of a come-to-the-table moment for a lot of people in a lot of different viewpoints where, you know, certain, you know, in certain areas, certain politicians of both sides benefit on the fact that there just isn't the kind of participation that could kind of bring some of these issues to the forefront. So I think if I was, you know, either the NRA or if I was some of these politicians that have taken a hard line on some of this, I think you need to at least address it and maybe come to some kind of consensus on maybe a path for change by just ignoring and saying there isn't change. These are our bright and enterprising kids and resourceful, and they're going to get out there, and because they understand that you can get out there. And we had a caller text in as well that says, you got to vote. Voting is what matters. And we've seen over the years, Bill, like, you know, just high ranking leaders in the political parties get voted out in their districts, and it can happen.
Right. I think you'll see a lot of, as these kids are voting more and more, as they get old enough to vote and then use their vote. You know, the most telling moment of the last couple of weeks is when they cornered Marco Rubio and said, make us a promise that you're not going to accept any more NRA money. And he just tap danced and couldn't do it and wouldn't do it. And you have to say at some point, you go, well, if you're in the pocket of those guys, of course you're going to vote their way. We're fed up with that. We're going to vote for whoever isn't in their pocket.
Specifically in Florida, where it actually, you know, happened, I think a lot of the politicians have been trained when some of these issues happen, you're just able to kind of ride it out. You know, the news cycle is a temporary thing. There'll be something else happening. People may forget. I don't know that these kids are going to forget. This could be a moment in time where, again, if you're Marco Rubio, do you want to stay elected or do you want to get a campaign contribution? You know, I don't know. Something's got to give.
Right. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to weigh in on this. A lot of people do. Let's start out with Dave. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Hi, how's it going?
I'm good. What's up?
Well, you know, I'm all for gun control. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't think assault rifles are, you know, necessary for hunting or anything like that. But I think in a broader sense, we're missing the mental health issues here. We have marginalized people who were bullied, who are treated like crap in high school, and they see these other kids who shoot up schools, who attack people, who do these things. Their names are plastered all over media. They're all over social media. People are talking about them. There's interviews. There's, you know, they become, I'm not going to say legends or anything, because, I mean, they're nefarious. They're not good people.
Right, sure.
But they just become huge. And so you have these kids who are sitting here feeling like they have no voice, feeling like no one understands them, no one cares about them. Well, now I'm going to go out and I'm going to do this because now I have a voice. Now people are going to see me. Regardless if it's a bad action or not, you know, kids act out because they want attention.
Right.
So what we're missing here is we're not reaching out to these kids who are bullied, who are cheer the crap. I mean, I dealt with bullying, I dealt with depression and anxiety my whole life. I mean, I had a great structure at home. I had parents who cared and loved me and everything, so I didn't go any, you know, bad routes or anything. I think it turned out okay.
Yeah.
But for other kids, there isn't that outlet. There isn't anything like that. They slip through the cracks. You know, you think about how many times, like in Florida, the police were called on this kid, or they said, oh, he has issues and everything. You know, he's expelled from school. But who reached out and tried to help him to make him feel that he could be a part of society? And I'm not saying he's, you know, he ultimately had the choice of what he did.
Of course.
But you know, it's something, I like that these kids are marching. I like that they're advocating for what they believe in and everything. But I think that there has to be a focus as well on the mental health.
Well, there is. And to your point, Dave, there probably isn't enough, but there is. But what could we do and what should we do differently? If you were put in charge today, what would your first move be?
Well, I think that the teachers need to become more involved when bullying goes on. I know when I was in school, there wasn't anybody who really reached out to me. Teachers saw it, you know, and they would turn a blind eye. Oh, kids will be kids. Or, you know, you got the football coach who'd be like, oh, well, you got to man up and, you know, fight your own battle.
Right.
And you know, and that's all well and good, but some people don't have the ability to do that. We're all wired differently. And I think that just taking this, you know, single stance of let them work it out, or, you know, they got to toughen up and everything, doesn't work. I think there has to be more outreach, more, you know, when something like this happens, there has to be more follow through, you know, as far as when you hear about a kid who like the one in Florida, who's acting out, doing these things and everything, and the police are calling and everything like that. Why wasn't a social worker involved? Why didn't somebody, right, you know, give him some mental health evaluation or something like that? Why did the school just expel him and not set him up with a program after expulsion where he was, you know, talked to and evaluated? You know, that's what I'm saying. We, you know, it's like mental health is a stigma. We can't talk about it. You know, we can't talk about people being depressed or anxious if there's something wrong with you or...
But would you agree with me, Dave, that it although what you said is true, it's probably being discussed and talked about more now than ever before, don't you think?
I do think it is. I do think we're taking great steps towards it. But I just feel like more needs to be done. I think it gets overshadowed by other things, you know?
Yeah.
I almost feel like it's a separate issue from the gun control issue, because the underlying issue is the mental health issue. Because I think, you know, if you think about it, in other countries, and I can't think of the country, I apologize, because I hate to cite something without having a full knowledge of it, but yeah, there was a man who stabbed a bunch of people on an island, killed a bunch of kids at a retreat camp. I think it was in, I want to say it was like Denmark or something like that.
Yeah.
And, but I mean, he was mentally disabled, and he was insane. So I think that people who have these issues and such, they'll act out in different ways, you know, not necessarily just with the guns.
Of course.
I mean, as I said, I'm for gun control. However, I think the underlying issue is the mental health.
More focus more on the mental health. Yeah.
Yeah. And the screening piece is essential, but there's no easy answers. I think that's what gets you to this point. I mean, you look at all of these people, whether it's the Texas shooting or, you know, whether it's, you know, Sandy Hook or the other things, when you're breaking down kind of the personalities of these people, as we do it kind of after all of this has happened, you look at like, these people never should have had guns. You know, there's so many, whether it's warning signs or whether it's legitimate roadblocks to gun ownership that just fell through the cracks. And I'm not saying that it's an easy thing. And you could think too, you know, look at Columbine, they could just get other things. You know, if you're bent on doing something, it's difficult to stop. I think the assault weapons is maybe a good place to start, because when you do get a hold of something, you can do so much damage in such a short period of time.
Dave, I appreciate the call. I'm sorry you had such a rough go as a kid. I can't express enough regret for that, but I appreciate your thoughts on all this. Thanks for calling in.
Well, I'm very much of what doesn't kill me makes me stronger, and I've learned from it, you know.
It's the best way to look at it. Very smart move.
My kids not be bullied.
Very smart. Dave, thank you. Have a good rest of the week. All right, take care.
Well,
I'm sorry we didn't get to more of your calls and your texts. We've run out of time. We'll take a quick break. We've got news next and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Dana for Wendy on WGN.
I love barbecue. Barbecue.
It's Bill Leff and it's Dane Neal. Dane is sitting in for Wendy. She's taking a couple days off. Maternity leave. She did not have a baby. She had a dog.
A C-section.
Long story. Yes.
A canine section.
Right. That's the C stands for canine. Dane, you have brought some friends up, friends of the show. Please explain.
Well, people love bacon. Dogs love bacon, typically. I would think most every living creature,
mm-hmm,
even pigs, probably would like bacon if you offered it to them in the
just
right context.
Just don't tell them what's in it.
Right. And in a city with so much great food, so many great events, you know, one of the very, very best ones in the entire country is on the verge, the precipice of what is Bacon Fest Chicago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you always need a visionary leader, of course, who defers to his great team, mm-hmm, right, at all times. And the guy leading the way with his hand on the pulse of all things with a pulse when it comes to bacon is Seth Zurer. He is in studio along with Jonathan Zaragoza, one of the highlighted chefs, and there are so many, 150, right? I think so. So Seth, Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks, we're always happy to be here.
Welcome back to you. Welcome for the first time to you, Jonathan.
Thank you, sir.
Very exciting. You've given us the history of Bacon Fest before, but it makes your mouth water to hear it, so please tell it again.
Sure.
How and why did this start?
Well, I mean, the why is obvious, because
people love bacon.
People love bacon, and the world needs a festival devoted to it. So
yes,
that's why we started it. So this is our 10th event this year. 10
Congrats.
Years. The next event is on April 6th and 7th, which is just a week and a half away. If people want to go, they should definitely get to the website, baconfestchicago.com, and buy those tickets in advance. So when we started, we were a very small event. We had 10 chefs,
mm-hmm,
about 75 guests. We occupied the dining room of the Publican restaurant,
mm-hmm, you know,
Paul Kahn's Pork and Oyster Bar, and had beer pairings. And that first event was just sort of our test our test event, our foray to see, do people in Chicago like bacon? Will they come to our event and eat bacon?
When you first thought this up, though, what was the like the reaction from people you told it to at first? Did they usually say, well, this can't miss? Or did people go, wow, you're really taking a risk with this thing? What was the reaction?
Universally positive.
Yeah,
I have yet to meet a person that hears me say Bacon Fest that isn't immediately their mind filled with fantasies of cured pork.
Of course.
Do you feel like, though, like now, and I think, you know, I'll contend that you have contributed to the love affair with bacon across the country and the awareness and the spotlight and all that kind of things. But do you feel like when you guys first started it that people were like, oh, wow, yeah, I really like the bacon was maybe under, if it's possible, underappreciated at the time?
Yeah, I will say that. I mean, you know, bacon has been on a roller coaster ride of popularity. When we started, it was actually a big year for bacon. It was right after the financial crisis. People were feeling kind of, no, I'm serious. It was 2008 after the real estate collapse. We started 2009. Everybody was feeling kind of down in the dumps and they wanted to feel good. And the thing that made them feel good was a little indulgence in their favorite breakfast meat.
Bacon was the hero they needed.
Yes.
That's right.
Well said, Jonathan. Well said. All right. So obviously, there's a thread of concern about health with bacon, but I think you
I'm
said
not
last
familiar
time,
with any health
you,
concerns.
You said you've never heard of this ever.
It's interesting you mentioned that. I was under the impression that bacon is good.
It's good for you.
Bill, for you.
Good you've heard of the big tobacco it. Lobby and yes. how they kind of dragged their feet with the whole. Yeah, Seth is one of the I think the big bacon
with the
lobby.
Bacon lobby.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Giving you all the bacon truth you need.
But in reality. If you eat it in moderation, if you don't go bacon crazy and just eat nothing but bacon, you it's fine, right?
I suppose that's true. I can't speak to it myself, but I believe that might be true.
All right,
people that's have fair. Their opinions.
Sounds good to me.
So you had no trouble that first year. You set it up. Like you said, there were only 10 chefs that first year, but then all of a sudden this thing snowballed into something that's just
internationally
known.
Internationally, there's at least 3 people in Europe
in other
that
countries.
Have heard of Bacon Fest.
Oh,
yes.
Come on. Again, another contention that people, I'm sure people make trips, and I'm sure you get it all from around the country, maybe even overseas to come and enjoy Bacon Fest. And I know that it's one of those not broke, don't fix it things. You know, you're going to do what you do, invite people in. Everybody loves it, but you have made some tweaks.
Sure.
Right? This year, and there's some new ways people can get, the fans can even get involved, because Bill, you got to know this too. This is outside of a great event for people to enjoy that they love, for the chefs themselves, and there have been so many. This is some bragging rights here.
Absolutely. So we have our Golden Rasher competition. We have almost 150 restaurants this year cooking up almost 4 tons of Newski's bacon. We have a new VIP experience for ticket holders. They get to visit a whiskey lounge, the Old Forester Speakeasy.
Nice.
We have contests. If you come dressed in bacon cosplay, you may win a Golden Rasher.
Wait, wow. Those are two words I've not heard together before.
Bacon, get used to it, Bill. Bacon cosplay. It's the future.
So this is people who will be dressed as bacon.
As bacon or other bacon-related items. There's a lady who comes dressed as a bacon superhero, Super Bacon Lady, every year. She's a strong contender.
Bill, we remember local Chicago television and food icons, Moo and Oink.
Yes,
right?
Of course.
They would dance kind of teasingly.
Moo and Oink.
Right.
I remember them.
You know superheroes better than... Has there ever been a bacon-related like cartoon character or superhero?
Only the ones Seth just mentioned.
Bacon Lady.
Bacon Lady.
Yeah.
But I mean, the really exciting thing about Bacon Fest is the food. And I think the food shows the universal appeal of bacon. And that's why I brought Jonathan Zaragoza along from Birreria Zaragoza, which is one of my favorite Chicago restaurants.
Thanks, Seth.
Sure.
Why is this your first time?
Why? Schedules weren't jiving, but this is our first year doing it. We've also been in business for 10 years at Birreria Zaragoza.
Congrats.
And yeah, that's thank great. You. So yeah, it's crazy. I was just a kid, 18 years old when we started.
Wow.
So, yeah. But yeah, this is our first year doing Bacon Fest, and we are super excited about it.
What's normally on the menu at your restaurant that is bacon based? Is there some bacon presence normally, or is it just
bacon
for this
presents.
Fest?
It's funny. We only serve one dish there, and it's oven roasted goat. So zero bacon.
Is that true? Do you only sell? Is there only one dish at the restaurant?
Honest to God,
if
yeah.
You can make
really?
Turkey bacon. Can't you make goat bacon?
You can make bacon out of everything.
Yeah, I was saying.
Actually, we can't make that. We can't
somebody
make that
wants claim. To know if there's any. Pork-free bacon being served up at this, and I'm sure there is. There's
absolutely
plenty.
Not. Go to a different isn't? Festival. This is oh, Bacon Fest.
No. I've never seen such anger.
So funny.
Absolutely not. Wow. Wow. I didn't know you could have a restaurant with just one thing being served. That's amazing.
Neither did we.
Wow.
Yeah. So, my parents and I started the restaurant in 07. I've been cooking this recipe of goat since I was 12, so 16 years now. Crazy. So, yeah, always serve as oven roasted goat, local goats, butchered in house, seasoned with sea salt, steam cooked first.
Oh, that sounds good.
And then we marinate them in red mole and roast them in some lard. And they get crispy, delicious, chopped up, and then we serve it with a tomato based broth.
So, do you even hand out menus or when people
don't? No, we just point.
There, that's what we have.
The menu on the wall says Chico or Grande or by the pound.
Let me translate. I'll translate. That means small and large.
That's it.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Those are your options.
That's it, man.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Wow.
Keep it simple.
So when it came to... We better take a quick break.
Yeah, more of this discussion next. Give us a call or a text if you want in. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Dana for Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and Dane Neal. Dana sitting in for Wendy, who is off today, tomorrow, and Friday. She'll be back on Monday. Our friends Seth and Jonathan are here to talk about Bacon Fest. Bacon Fest is coming soon. What do they need to know and how do they do it?
April 6th and 7th, there are three sessions. If you want to go, you have to get tickets. They are available at our website, baconfestchicago.com. Why should you get tickets to Bacon Fest? Because it is a all-inclusive bacon wonderland where you can eat cured pork, drink beer, wine, and cocktails until you have bacon coming out of your ears.
Has that been an issue in the past, Seth, of bacon a lot of people's ears?
As a response team to take care of anybody.
Right. You got to have a paramedic for that.
Perhaps I've given the wrong impression.
Tickets available at the door if they don't get them in advance or not?
Maybe. Saturday lunch is pretty close to selling out. Yeah. Friday dinner and Saturday dinner might be fine at the door, but I would say, why take the risk?
Right. Play it safe.
Why take the chance? Well, and the chefs, I don't want to say take risks, but they kind of have fun with it too. So they get out there, they kind of spread their wings, do some different things than maybe you would have experienced at the restaurant. And Jonathan, you did that too, right? You're so famous for and acclaimed for the goat, but you got on board with the cool dog here.
Yeah, for the one thing. We only do goat at the shop, and this type of event or Bacon Fest gives us an opportunity to create something new that we wouldn't normally cook on our menus at the restaurants or at our respective restaurants.
Right.
So I feel that's the big draw for chefs. Being a part of a community, especially Chicago, speaking in terms of other culinary cities in our country, it's super tight-knit here, really tight-knit. And I think that's what makes Bacon Fest so successful in our city is that. Not that it can't travel anywhere else, but Chicago, I mean, come on.
It's got to be fun for you guys, though. It's a who's who's list of chefs and all working together for the same car. That's got to be a fun.
Well, it's a who's who's and then me.
And then
stop.
No, but
false modesty.
No, but it really is. And these guys are super talented and a bunch of chefs from around the city. And just to see what they're creating is super fun.
Seth, it's always a great lineup. But if you want to name off a few that that people are excited about.
So, of course, Birria Zaragoza will be there. Jonathan Zaragoza. We're going to have The Delta. Adam Went, one of Chicago Magazine's best new restaurants of 2017.
Love it.
A thumbs up from you, Jonathan.
Oh, yeah.
We have a few 10-year veterans that were there from the very first event, including the Signature Room on the 95th.
Oh,
we have V Restaurant from Western Springs, Paul Varant's place.
Yeah.
And then there's one chef that's been there for 10 years, but at three different restaurants. His name is Nathan Sears.
Oh,
he started off
nice.
As a sous chef at V, then owned he was a partner in the Radler and now works at State and Lake Chicago Tavern.
He's great.
So we have, a history with these truly great, truly talented, truly bacon-loving Chicago chefs.
Do me a favor. I know everybody's very creative on what they do with their bacon. Give me a couple of examples of what's happened in the past that are a little bit off the beaten path bacon-wise.
So Zaragoza, Jonathan's providing a bacon-wrapped Sonoran hot dog with... What's on the hot dog?
So it's instead of a bun, we have a bolillo roll, which is where we put our sandwiches in Mexico. It's a really nice, crusty piece of bread, but it kind of like wraps up the dog really nicely. It's more pillowy than normal. It has mustard. I made a habanero aioli on there and a pico de gallo because usually the Sonoran dog gets like tomatoes and onion. I'm like, just add cilantro and some lime and some chili. Let's make a pico de gallo.
Good.
Yeah, it has some heat to it, but it's really tasty.
Yeah.
And it has some caramelized pinto beans with some roasted garlic in them.
Seth's eyes got very large.
Very hungry right now.
Very big.
Yeah. Did I mention there's a bacon wrapped hot dog in there as well?
So that's one example. Last year, one of the winning dishes was a kind of mashup of a South American empanada with Chinese flavors and bacon. It was an XO sauce with like scallions and cilantro on a deep fried empanada filled with braised pork. That was the Three Floyds Brew Pub.
Very ambitious.
Came up and did that. dish. We have had dishes that are like Japanese inflected. So Chef Takashi is one of our past chefs. He won a Golden Rasher, which is our Oscar of the bacon world, a Golden Rasher award for his bacon chawan mushi, which is a Japanese egg custard with fava beans, asparagus, chunks of bacon.
I love chawan mushi.
And then like a slick of bacon grease on the top just to make sure you get that full bacon flavor.
3D flavor.
Yeah. But there's a lot. There's 142 restaurants and then a bunch of sponsors, and each one is doing something unique.
And Bill, it is one of those rare events that really does go the complete gamut. Everything from the very basics to kind of comfort food to elevated fine dining food, you know, all with that common thing of bacon. But it's all there. Every kind of thing you can imagine. It's a great selection.
I imagine it. You know that scene in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory where the kids first come in and they look around and everything's made of candy? Mm-hmm. That's what I imagine bacon lovers must feel when
they're all
walk in.
Looking up in the air, spinning around, luxuriating in the aerosolized bacon fat that is all around them. And it ends, you leave smelling like bacon. It ends
like the river scene.
Always does. It always does. Has there been, I know this is an unfair question, but I'll ask it anyway. Has there been one or two experiments with bacon at Bacon Fest that maybe the chef would rather forget about? Has there been something that just hasn't quite worked for whatever reason?
You know, the good thing about Bacon Fest is that no matter what you do, at the end of the day, there's some delicious bacon wrapped around, stuck into something. Sense. So there's only so low you can go.
Bill, it's kind of like our lobster roll comment. It's like, how bad could it be?
Right. It's still got lobster in it. Yeah. Go on, Dave.
Well, we mentioned like the Golden Rasher Award, and this is an award everybody kind of pines for. And now, for the first time ever, the people, the attendees, can vote on this, right?
People's choice. You know, people have been asking for it. They want their voice to be heard. This is America. Mm-hmm. It's a democracy.
Yep.
People's voice matters.
Yep.
And that is true at Bacon Fest as well. So if at Bacon Fest this year, if you bring your cell phone, we will have an ability for people to vote by texting for their favorite dish at Bacon Fest at each session.
Oh, that's excellent.
The new Golden Rasher reflecting the will of the people. In these topsy-turvy times,
we need
the people's voice
like
must be heard.
And what does the winner receive?
The winner receives a 4-inch-tall pewter and plastic trophy with their name printed on it.
That's
called
stunning.
The Golden Rasher
that's
Award.
Stunning.
And notoriety, and the envy of their friends, and the esteem of their colleagues.
Bragging rights. You get bragging rights, too.
It's funny. It's not a huge trophy. There's no big money prize, but the chefs, you would think there was $10,000 at stake. Yeah. They want to win. They want everyone to know that their bacon is the best.
Bill, you know, the Golden Globe is not a giant trophy.
No, it's not a big trophy.
It's just what it means.
Right.
It's important.
The representation. Your story, your backstory, Jonathan, is an interesting one. You're a chef, but your goal, your dream was to play baseball, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A baseball family. My dad played in Mexico pro ball, and then he played at UIC for his years there. And I played junior college at Marine Valley.
Oh, excellent.
For a little bit. Yeah.
But your hope was to someday play pro ball? You were hoping to
make
the big leagues?
I was obsessed with baseball. Yeah. Yeah. Just wasn't in the cards.
And then do you know anyone else who has a similar story where their goal was baseball, or they got to baseball and then just went, no, I think I'll go the food route instead?
Maybe I know another buddy that got into cooking as well was a teammate of mine.
Yeah.
Him. And I mean, I've seen athletes become chefs. I mean,
oh, that's great.
There's a lot of parallels between both. I think it's a team sport.
Yeah.
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 So, that's excellent.
Yeah.
Good.
Awesome.
I'm glad you found something else that you love so much.
Oh, man, I love it.
That's excellent.
Thank you.
Give us the pitch one more time, Seth, for Bacon Fest.
The
what
pitch,
do people need
it?
To
baseball?
Do? Yeah, because of baseball. Yep.
If you like bacon, and I think that you do, you should come to Bacon Fest on April 6th or 7th next week. So not this Friday, Saturday, but next Friday and Saturday. You have to get tickets at baconfestchicago.com. There will be unlimited tastes of delicious bacon dishes like Zaragoza's Sonoran hot dog. There will be drinks, beer, wine, and cocktail, all included for your ticket price. You will be able to vote for your people's choice, and you'll get that good feeling of knowing that you're supporting the Greater Chicago Food Depository.
Outstanding.
To whom we've given more than $400,000.
Have you really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's nice. And I'm sure the temptation is there every year to invite Kevin Bacon. Has he showed up to any of these?
He went once to the Atlanta. There's a Bacon Fest in Atlanta, and
he was there.
He went there. We have thought about booking his band,
the Bacon Brothers.
The Bacon Brothers, it's a little spendy, and we like to focus our resources on making a delicious festival.
That makes sense.
So Kevin Bacon's not going to be there.
This year.
I'm out.
He's not yet confirmed.
You're not Twitter, Jonathan.
He's probably listening right now.
He's considering it. We'll get him in.
Kevin Bacon.
Guys, thanks so much.
Great to
see both of you. Thanks for all your help in this. And more show coming next. Stick around. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. Kim, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff, and Dane Neal is sitting in for Wendy. Wendy will return on Monday. She has a couple days off. She got a dog. She'll tell you all about it when she gets back. Dane, you've been to Disney World, right?
Sure, of course, yes.
Wendy and I have had this debate in the past. It is called by many the happiest place on earth. Do you find it to be the happiest place on earth?
I think there are happy neighborhoods within it.
Parts of Disney World are happy, yeah. But there's also some unhappy
patches. The parking lots, maybe not so happy.
Right.
The line in and out, not so happy. The cash register moments, oftentimes not so happy. But they work hard to do what they... I don't think anybody on the theme park side does it anywhere near as well as Disney does.
They're masters.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Making you feel nice. Well, a man is suing Disney World for a strange reason. This guy maintains that while enjoying a vacation at Walt Disney World in Florida, he was bit by a rat. Which is, do I even need to point out the irony of the fact that the spokesperson...
I'm like, he's a mouse.
Is a mouse. Right. I think if he were bitten by a mouse, he would have found that part of the entertainment. Oh, look, a mouse bit me. But a rat... It's gone too far.
You pay extra for that mouse, you know, the ultimate mouse experience, right? The mouse interaction.
Oh, you got to sign up weeks in advance.
Yeah. You guess any time you have like that much everything, that much food, that much whatever, you think they would find a way to, has we substantiated this? Is this true or is this an allegation?
Well, here's the story. This is out of Florida, obviously. A lawsuit filed earlier this month in Orange County, Florida, claims that a man suffered debilitating medical problems that stem from a rat bite that was suffered at Walt Disney World. The lawsuit, which was filed on March 19th, claims that Galen Halderman, age 59, had ridden Buzz Lightyear's Space Ranger Spin back in April of 2014.
Okay.
That's a long time ago.
I don't know what the rat statute of limitations is.
What is the rat statute of limitations?
Someone knows. You have to flip through the legal books there.
He was in a nearby merchandise store when he was bit. According to the lawsuit, Halderman was pushing his wife, Carol Halderman, through the store on her wheelchair when the rat jumped onto one of the wheels of her chair and moved toward her arm. Now, when you spend a whole day at Disney World, when stuff like this happens, your first reaction is, look how real this rat looks. It looks like a real rat.
Well, and we always think of Mickey Mouse. Obviously, he's the star of the show. But you think of Cinderella. You know, there's some rats or mice or whatever in there. I think there's a lot of characters, you know, from the A range all the way down to the D range,
right,
that have participated in Disney movies.
Sure. Well, the difference with Mickey Mouse is he is a rodent, but he dresses in a tuxedo. Like, if this rat were dressed in formal wear, I think Mr. Halderman might pull back on the lawsuit.
Was there any kind of... Would he be able to identify in a lineup this particular rat?
Because of other rats?
Like Gus, right, has like kind of an oversized...
Also a mouse. Jacques and Gus are mice.
This could just be, you know, a mistaken identity on the species side, right? Because these mice... Mickey's big for a mouse.
You might think
he's like a wallaby or something, right? Basically.
So would you rather have a rat-sized rat jump on you at an amusement park or a human-sized mouse? Which would be the better option?
Ooh.
That's the age-old question.
No easy answers.
People have always asked that question.
Here's what you also wonder is, just as though, you know, kind of the not positive side of humanity, where people, you hear those stories, they bring their own bug into a restaurant so they can toss it out at the proper time.
Are you alleging that Mr. Halderman brought a rat into Walt Disney World?
I'm just saying, I would like to have that rat questioned and see if we can get to the bottom
of it.
Right.
That's fair. Here's the rest of his story. Just as the rat was about to bite into Carol's arm, Galen grabbed the rat and yanked it off the chair. As he did so, the rat bit into one of Galen's fingers. Galen had to twist the rat's neck. Oh, this must have been fun for kids watching.
I'm sure it's all caught on. Is there security camera?
Oh, there's security camera everywhere at Disney World.
Roll down.
It's like Las Vegas. You can't. There's not a square inch of Disney World that isn't covered by cameras. I'm sure they have all the footage. Galen had to twist the rat's neck, and the rat fell to the floor, where someone threw an empty plastic container over it. Quick thinking, by the way.
It's discreet. A lot of kids around.
Was it a Disney character that did that, or was that another park patron?
Again, I think they have the characters kind of moving freely within the crowds.
Right.
I just don't know what's going on here.
I'm trying to think. Did somebody use a rat as a spokesperson? Is Chuck E. Cheese... Is that a rat?
Chuck E. Cheese is the only, I think, you know, proud...
Or is that a mouse? That's a mouse, right? He's a rat?
He's as ratty as...
He is? Yeah, I guess he is, Chuck E. Cheese.
Well, I think he's a rat. He seems more rat-like.
With mouse qualities. He's got like a mouse quality, but if you're that big, you're normally a rat.
Well, if the mouse quality is that he wants you to have a good time, I think that's pretty universal.
And didn't Quiznos also have some animal that resembled kind of like...
like a possum or something?
Yeah, something that wouldn't be desirable to have around food.
On the licensing side, I'm wondering if all, and I'm doing the air quotes, if all the good animals are taken.
Maybe, you know, that's what it
is. Or all the right. Because like a rat, you know, right. in a restaurant doesn't sound... great, you know, as far as
you
know,
but you say to
hey, that's Claude the cockroach here. He shouldn't be there.
Not in right? a restaurant setting.
So here's I think if you're just trying to look to kind of raise awareness to make sure that the park can be as safe as possible to right. prevent others from falling into the clutches of this you know this ravenous rat
right.
is one thing, or is our star of our story here is he trying to get some money from the Disney folks?
Oh yeah, absolutely he is. But I'll tell you how much it might surprise you. That's coming up in a second. A Disney employee ran over and asked onlookers not to take any photographs, according to the lawsuit. I'm sure that strategy will work. I'm positive that in this day and age, whenever you ask a group of people if something awful is happening, I'm sure if you ask them nicely, we'd appreciate it if nobody took pictures. I'm positive everybody would comply.
If you like a rabid rodent kind of wrestles someone to the ground at the park, and then the person with the name tag comes out and says, hey, everybody.
Right.
You know, right. don't take a picture.
Several people, by way of text, want to know if the rat that bit this man, Mr. Haldeman's name was Remy. That, of course, a reference to Ratatouille, another Disney film about a lovable rat, a lovable rodent who happens to be a rat.
And it was an actual rat, so no mistaken identity right. there. You know,
Who ran a restaurant.
Did it have an apron on? See, that's where if we could just find out what the rat was wearing.
Right. The key to this story is that. As a result of Disney's negligence, Galen Haldeman was bitten by this rat and has been beset by debilitating medical problems ever since, according to the lawsuit. The couple is seeking, ready? Now, keep in mind, this is Disney, so you say to yourself, well, it's got to be well into the millions, maybe more, right?
What kind of, okay.
So they want $15,000.
Oh, that's reasonable. If I'm
the, wow.
If I'm the lawyer for these guys.
I think Mickey keeps that on him. Like, if you ever stop him in the park and you go, I really need 15 grand, he'll just peel it off for you.
He peels it off and he says, are we good?
Right. Is everything okay? Yeah, 15,000. I'm fine. Have all right. Day. I don't want to hear from you ever again. No, 15. That's all I needed, Mickey.
Sign
thanks.
The waiver. We're right. out.
Sign here, bub. All right. I'm in.
15,000.
That's it. I swear to you, as I heard about the story, I go, oh, here's a $50 million day for the Haldemans.
Well, you'd think it's even, I mean, I've never been in that situation personally, but I've seen a lot of infomercials and there's some daytime
Dane,
TV.
I've bit people and given them $15,000.
Hey, have you been in a wreck? You know, right. you get a check. You know, right. If you call that guy, I think that's malpractice on the attorney side, because $15,000 wouldn't even get you. I mean, a couple vacations there.
Yeah.
You know, it depends if you want to bring other people, and then you've got the security detail to protect yes. you from the rats.
Yes.
And
yep. It adds up.
That's not very much money.
It adds
though.
Up. All right. We will wait anxiously to see how this happens. Somebody also wants to know if this was Splinter. Now, who is Splinter? I'm trying to think of who Splinter is.
Splinter is
that a Disney character?
Well, Teenage Mutant. It's a Nickelodeon. Teenage
oh, that's what Splinter's from.
So, which is here. Now, this is possible that there could have been like a defamatory infiltration of a foreign character.
Of other properties, right? They're from other yep, companies, yep. so they find their way in.
To somehow tarnish
oh,
Disney's
reputation.
I hope reputation.
That's not true, Dane.
I think that's what you do. You say, go talk to the Nickelodeon. Talk to the Nickelodeon folks.
See what they know. Maybe they know more about it, Bob.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more show ahead. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Dane Neal. Dane is filling in for Wendy, who's got a couple of days off. She'll be back on Monday. Several people making comments, Dane, about the story we just told you, about yeah. the man who is suing Disney World for the whopping sum of $15,000, which I believe could sink them. That could be the end of Disney World as
well,
we know it.
Is it almost, you know, that maybe if it's too low, then they think that... hey, you know, that's kind of a crazy small amount. That
right.
You should have somewhere. Can't be so crazy where they have to think, well, geez, do we really want to do this? But I think there's a certain amount that maybe, you know, you got to talk to Greg Lerner, you know, the get a rec, get a check guy. I think they should shoot for a little bit higher.
A little bit higher.
It said debilitating injuries.
Right. Several people said, I don't even know if there's a lawyer that would take a case for $15,000. There's something to that. Here's an interesting text from 219. When our daughter was 3 years old, she fell off. She fell at Disney World and cut her head open.
Oh no!
Park staff immediately appeared and escorted us into an office where we were presented with a check. Now,
what?
I dated a girl for a while. There was a girl that I dated in college who worked almost every summer at Disney World while she was in college. And she told me stories about how back then, now keep in mind back then, everybody didn't have a cell phone, and it wasn't easy to just hold up your phone and just quickly take a picture. People had cameras, certainly, but right. It wasn't so instantaneous. And she said that in the summers that she worked there, sometimes there would be an accident, and they would quickly, if anybody saw it happen, they would escort them to a place.
Even the witnesses?
Even the witnesses, wow. And say...
everybody want to check?
We stand behind everybody's experience at Disney World being a pleasant one, and if word gets out on this, it's bad for all of us, so let's figure out what it would take for this to go away, you know?
That seems like a good strategy,
yeah.
Because think about this. The first thing that you can do, if you've ever been in a minor car accident or whatever, like as soon as you tell two people and so on, and they talk
right.
to their lawyer, oh my gosh, don't sign anything, you know, you
yeah.
wait, you know, you've got to do this. I think if they can just get the people to sign off on everything,
mm-hmm.
make everybody sort of happy. Obviously, safety is a major concern, but just not let it get where people are out there, you know, contemplating, well, geez, what is a debilitating rat bite worth?
Right, right, right.
You know, and then not
right.
everybody's going to come back with 15,000. So maybe you're just like, hey, kids, you know, scuff their knees and bump their heads like
sure.
all the time,
yeah.
and I think they just want to get it done with. So it's there's not all these things. And figure all those people, Bill, at that place. There's a lot of people cutting themselves, falling down.
Sure,
the fixer,
right? Who's the Disney fixer?
Right.
I always pictured the Disney villains, like it'd be Captain Hook and Cruella De Vil. They'd be the ones who'd round you up for something like this.
It's Donald Trump's guy. It's that Cohen guy.
Right.
That's where he started.
Right. There's a book that I've recommended in the past, and I will continue to recommend. It's called Inside the Mouse, which is all these stories that were written by people that used to work at Disney World, and they tell you all the secrets that they really don't want you to know. And I love Disney World. I love it. I go there all the time. I think it's fantastic. But there's all these things that they say, you know, for every happy story, there's a couple that are not so happy.
Well, I'm sure a place that big with that many people.
Oh, yeah.
That you have to imagine that there's, you know, a lot of stuff going, even with the best of intentions and all the resources in the world, it's got to be stuff that happened. Imagine if a similar book came out about Santa's Village.
Bestseller. New York Times bestseller. In the book, there's a chapter, and the chapter is devoted to the fact that when Disney World opened, for years and years after, it was a rule there at Disney World that no one could die at Disney World. If you died at Disney World, you could not be pronounced dead there.
What?
You had to be, yeah, yeah. So they tell the story about a couple of situations where people did die there, but they weren't be allowed, nobody could pronounce them dead. They had to be taken off property. And then the declaration was made off property.
You're like at a roadside plaza. All right, here.
That guy died in Kissimmee, 20 miles away.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
But again, you can see the reason for that is
really?
They want to protect, you know, they want to protect the belief that it is the happiest place on earth.
Okay.
And no one dies in the happiest place on earth.
Yeah, and I'm sure anybody who showed up there and then ended up their day ended up a little different than maybe they hoped and they died, they
right.
would rather have not died.
No.
There.
No.
Yeah.
No. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. Dane and I are headed toward the internet. We're going to do the bonus hour, the stream of consciousness. Join us there. Go to WGNradio.com. It's really easy to do. We'll do that for the next hour. And Steve's coming in to give you the Wintrust business lunch if you want to stay here. So stick around. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN.